So first of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to talk about some of our work. I'd like to talk about something that Jim Jenkins started off in the morning, and that is segregation. And I'm going to talk about dense flows, mainly in a prototype system, which is a rotating cylinder. This is what I'll talk about. Initially, for a short time, I'll talk about mixing in the system. And then I'll spend some time talking about segregation, which is driven by density differences alone. So you have no size differences in the particles, only density differences. And I'll describe some experiments, some models, and I'll try and make some connection to kinetic theory. And then finally, I'd like to say a little bit about size segregation, about which we don't understand as much, and some preliminary analysis of this problem. Suman Hazra, Prasada Rao, and Orpe are some of the students at IIT Bombay who worked on these things. Some of this work was done in collaboration with Professor Julio Ortino and Joe McCarthy. And this has been funded by some funding agencies in India. So rotating cylinders actually are old and very widely used piece of equipment. For example, if you just want to make cement, there's probably about 100 million tons in the US every year. This is about 90 meters long and 15 meters in diameter. And, you know, mixing and segregation is really important in these types of processes. So we've been trying to understand this mainly from the viewpoint of getting more efficient operation of these types of equipment. And in fact, we have a small kiln setup to see what effect or how, if we can control these processes, we can make, let's say, cement more efficiently. The kind of system that we've been using for doing the basic studies is this type of quasi-2D system. So you have a spacer and two glass plates, and the material is in between, and this whole thing rotates to generate a flow. And we've been sort of looking at how things distribute themselves by doing sampling. So it's a sort of tedious procedure. You can take this out, put it on a slanted table, and then put a template on top and do sampling using a vacuum probe. So this is the basic kind of experiment that we do. So let me start with the simplest problem that you can look at in this type of system. Supposing we want to mix glass beads, which are nearly spherical, of two different colors, identical in every other way. Yeah? About 10 particle diameter. So let me just, we've done lots of studies of these type, but I'll only discuss one aspect, that is, can we study the sort of effective diffusion of these particles in this system, and a simple model that describes this. So this shows a typical experiment. So when you start off, this is the initial configuration. And as soon as you start rotating, there is an avalanche on the free surface. And that produces this kind of streak. And then after that, there's a continuous flow, a continuous steady flow. And the material sort of goes around. So after half a revolution, when this entire material has gone through, you can see the avalanche streak has diffused a bit. And then this part is sort of radially symmetric, corresponding to this region. And then the next time it goes right through this layer, it diffuses more and more. Yeah. Yes, they are identical. So they're just different in color. We are in the continuous flow regime. Okay, so to describe this, we have a very simple continuum equation. This is the convective mixing, and this is the diffusive mixing, and all of this is happening in a relatively shallow layer on the free surface. So if you want to try and describe this, we need to know something about the self-diffusivity of the particles, and we need to know something about the flow. So in this, we've just treated the self-diffusivity as a fitting parameter, and we are using these kinds of experiments to back out at least in magnitude, what this self-diffusivity should be. From scaling, we can expect that it will go something like particle diameter squared times the shear rate. Yes? Oh, you mean why have I pulled this out of the derivative? This is a constant in our system. It turns out that in this particular flow, the shear rate is nearly constant. Okay, I can show it to you on the next slide. But essentially, F here is the number fraction of the red beads. This is self-diffusivity, so I'll describe a little bit about the flow and the shear rate in the next transparency. So we've spent a lot of time looking at what is the flow in a rotating cylinder. And you know, what you basically find is that essentially there is a flow on the free surface. And this part of the flow is essentially a solid body rotation. If you look at the velocity profile inside the layer, it is roughly linear, and this gives the characteristic shear rate over there in the flowing layer. This is the normal velocity, which is much smaller than the velocity along the layer. We have analytical expressions for the layer thickness and for the shear rate. And just to answer your question, in this, since the shear rate is a constant, you essentially have the diffusivity also roughly constant in the entire layer. Of course, I'm sort of talking in a more macroscopic sense, because we can expect that as you go from the free surface into sort of the bulk of the layer, your diffusivity is going to decrease, because in fact the shear rate decreases smoothly as you go into the bulk. So I'm essentially describing a sort of macroscopic picture in which we are replacing the actual curved velocity profile by a profile with a constant shear rate. But this essentially shows the model. We've done lots of experiments to measure the layer thickness, and the model predicts reasonably well the layer thickness at the midpoint, as well as the profile of the layer thickness. So the model is admittedly a little crude, but it seems to do a reasonable job of predicting the kind of structures that you get in mixing. But more importantly, we can measure what are the concentration profiles, the number fraction of the red particles with radial distance, and the model seems to predict this also reasonably well. And we've done this for a number of different system parameters, and the fitted value of the self-diffusivity agrees quite well with the shear rate. So in a sort of macroscopic sense, when you're looking at the cylinder as a whole, using a single number seems to give reasonable results.
What's the value of
T1? It's about 0.06 or something. So that was a little bit about mixing of identical particles. Now supposing we just make a slight change and then replace one of the particles with something of different density. So for example, over here we have 3 mm glass beads and 3 mm steel balls. If you rotate the cylinder, then very quickly the material segregates. This is not like a phase separation, but it's just a segregation in which the denser particles come to the core and the lighter particles are on the outside. And what is actually happening is, as this material flows down, you have of course flow, mixing, but there's also segregation in which the denser particles move down. They go into the inner streamlines, and as a result, they are in the core. So you have this kind of separation that takes place. And really we know something about flow and mixing to some degree of confidence at least, and we'd like to try and predict what is driving the segregation, or, and can we estimate the rate of segregation in this?
Sure.
Yeah.
Each particle starts randomly.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a different starting condition. And we, what we've been doing here is, we look at what is the state after a long time of rotation. So in some sense, we're looking at an equilibrium state at long times. So this is a sort of naive way of thinking about or trying to estimate what the segregation velocity would be. So if you have, let's say, a mixture of equal size particles, but let's say one is more dense than the others, then we can imagine that this would have a sedimentation velocity which is proportional to the particle density less the average density. The average density is the density of the mixture around it, which is something like this. And then the flux is just the velocity times number density, which is this. So over here, F is the number fraction of the heavier particles, N is the total number density, V is the actual volume of one particle, M is the mass of the particle. So if you look at this expression, we can replace gravity by the pressure gradient, and essentially this kind of density segregation appears to be a pressure diffusion and driven by buoyancy. Well, another thing that you can look at is kinetic theory. So obviously this will not apply to a system such as ours, but we can look at it to get some guidance. And so for very dilute systems, and let's say ideal gas system, you have ordinary diffusion, which is proportional to the gradient of the number density of, let's say, the heavier ones. But you also have diffusion due to pressure gradients and diffusion due to temperature gradients. It turns out that the form that we've sort of done through this simple argument looks very much like this. And so we thought that we would use an equation of this form to try and figure out what will be the equilibrium profile, supposing we had particles of two different densities in a gravitational field. And if we use the kinetic theory expressions, you have a flux because of the pressure gradient and another flux because of the mixing or the ordinary diffusion, and everything cancels out, and eventually you get a very simple expression which says this is the essentially the number fraction of the heavy particles, this is the number fraction of the light particles, the ratio of those two essentially go exponentially with distance. So this is for an ideal gas, but if you look at more detailed kinetic theories for dense gases, for example, the work by Jenkins and Mancini, Arnason and Willits, well, if you put the diffusion velocities to zero, that is, if you assume that there is no net motion, and if you neglect temperature diffusion, then again, you have exactly what I just showed you, but in a more generalized form. This is the driving force due to gravity, and then this essentially is the mixing because of the diffusion. So you have two terms, and it simplifies to something like this. You have two equations which you have to solve simultaneously. Mu over here is the chemical potential, and NH is the number density of the heavier particles, number density of the light particles, and so forth. So now these are the two conditions that the diffusion velocities of the heavy and light particles are zero. And now if we substitute for the chemical potential for equal size particles, it turns out that the chemical potential reduces to something like this. Okay. So you have one term which corresponds to an ideal gas, which is temperature times log of the number density. And there's another term. In the case of equal size particles, it really simplifies a lot, and it depends only on the total solids volume fraction. It doesn't depend on anything else. And if you substitute this in here, if you neglect F, you get exactly what you get for an ideal gas, of course, which I showed you earlier. But even if you keep this non-ideal term in here, you get this term and this term in these two equations. So this essentially is the contribution of the non-ideal component of the chemical potential, this and this. But strangely, it turns out that both of these are the same. So if you subtract one equation from the other, you get exactly what you would have got for an ideal gas. And in fact, the profile turns out to be the same as that for an ideal gas. So this is unique. And in a sense, the reason for this is that we are using equal size particles. So there is no geometrical effect. It's just the mass is different, but the geometry of this mixture and the pure component is identical. So this is really a great simplification in the case of equal size particles, and you get the same profile. So we did some Monte Carlo computations for elastic particles, and of course this theory works very well for all number densities, even when it gets to quite high volume fractions over here. And also we did some soft particle simulations. The materials, this is on a chute flow, and these are the lighter particles, these are heavier particles. These also separate out, and in fact you get the same sort of thing, that when you plot log of F divided by 1 minus F, that varies linearly with distance, and essentially it seems that the form of the equation works quite well. From this, from the slope, we can back out some kind of an effective temperature, and that in dimensionless terms turns out to be about 0.68. This is the actual temperature measured from the RMS velocities, and you can see that it's at least an order of magnitude smaller. So it seems that the theory works, but obviously there is some gap in the sense that you cannot use the actual calculated temperature. If you did that, you would get a curve over here, whereas this gives actually a straight line. So there seems to be an effective temperature which is constant, and it's much larger than the temperature from the computations. So just before I wrap up, I'll show you that I've shown you something about mixing in rotating cylinders. We can just translate this same thing to the case of segregation in rotating cylinders. So we have the flow remains unchanged with density. We've checked that this is in fact true. We assume that the diffusion is unchanged even though we have a mixture of different density particles. And then we use segregation, the same form that we get from kinetic theory, but of course since we don't know what is this effective temperature, we have one fitting parameter here, which is a prefactor, is B. And in fact, if we use this for the same value of the fitting parameter, we get reasonably good agreement between these experiments, and these are some simulations, and we also get reasonable agreement when we actually measure what is the concentration as a function of, let's say, the radial distance here. For different cases, there's good quantitative agreement. So I think I have 2 minutes left. Okay. So, well, I have a lot more to say, but probably not enough time. But what I'd like to just mention as far as size segregation is concerned is that this is a more complicated problem. You know, you can get, I'd just like to mention the work of Natalie Thomas over here. Supposing you take a few large particles in a sea of small particles, as you change the size ratio, the big particles can go at the periphery or they can come to the center. And you know, this is the radial position of the particles that can go from R by R equal to 1, that is over here, right down to somewhere in the center, around 0.2 for R by R about 20. So a lot of complicated behaviors can be seen in these types of systems in which there is size segregation. We've done some measurements in which we can find, let's say this is the profile of the weight fraction of small particles. We can see a core of the small particles and small particles at the side as well. You have this kind of behavior. And then we also made measurements in the layer And this also shows similar kind of trends, that you get small particles at the base of the layer, big particles in the middle, and again small particles right at the top. The velocity only changes slightly as you increase the concentration of the small particles. You go from 25 to 50 to 75. The velocity increases a little bit, but the mean velocity of the big and small particles in the mixture are nearly the same. So 3 mm particles and 2 mm particles have nearly the same velocity, though there seems to be some difference in the RMS velocities between the two. So this is still preliminary, but we hope that we can use this to try and explain and calculate how this segregation occurs. And I'll just put up one more slide. That is, we can take the same data and plot it in the same way, log of F divided by 1 minus F versus the depth. And for equal density particles, we just got a straight line. Over here, we have more complicated behavior. So this is sort of with this right slope over here, but then as you go to the free surface, it turns over and you have this type of behavior we cannot yet explain. So my conclusions are that when we're looking at the scale of the cylinder, we have good models for tracer mixing. We have extended that to more complicated cylinder shapes and so forth. We think we have a pretty reasonable understanding of density segregation, but size segregation is quite complicated. Things like effects of size on the flow and so forth are still need to be taken into account. Thank you.
Yeah, even by the standards of granular physics, a factor of 10 seems big. Do you have any ideas about where it comes from?
Okay, so what are you referring to?
The effective temperature.
Oh. I guess. I guess you are talking about.
Yes.
I have a feeling that, you know, in some sense, because we have such a dissipative system, that this granular temperature probably is not a very true representative of the actual motion of the particles. So, you know, maybe the particles can actually move. What this seems to say is, as the temperature is higher over here, it seems like they are more fluid than the fluctuations would indicate. Of course, I don't have a very clear idea why this should be, but you know, there doesn't seem to be much connection between this temperature and the temperature that we get from here, because you know, there's a significant increase in temperature here, whereas in this the temperature is constant. Yeah, constant. It's some different sort of effective temperature rather than the actual RMS velocity kind of.
Things.
No, we have not done those studies.
In this case, for this specific case that you find this 0.68 temperature.
Well, I mean, if you look at this, this will also have a slope which is of the same order of magnitude. So in all the cases, the slope will be of roughly this magnitude, but this is at least one order of magnitude lower. So I'm not clear. So what I'm trying to say is,
for instance, you don't know how to change that value by changing the flow velocity or.
Okay, so what I'm saying is this, or at least what I'm trying to say is this, that if you have these kind of equal size particles, then the basic structure of the equilibrium segregation profile is almost like that for an ideal gas. But in some sense, the effective temperature is not. And we don't know what is the connection between this and the actual temperature?
I mean, that just mainly says that in this relationship you have something that is linearly going with z, and the prefactor could be not mg over t, but could be basically anything that, as long as it you know, doesn't change with depth, could be the I parameter or, you know, any of the
it
other
could
things.
Be, yeah.
Just a quick question. How do you make the temperature dimensionless in these graphs?
In all of these, the temperature is made dimensionless with mg and the radius of the particles.
Are there any more questions or comments? If not, let's thank the Vang again and adjourn. We.